That's the symphony written by Tanya Leon, Bata. She is a great Afro-Cuban composer here in the United States, and her music is just amazing and doesn't get enough play. But today is her birthday. We wish her a happy birthday and play you some of her music during our breaks. We are now joined by Edward Wyckoff Williams, who is contributing editor to The Root and political contributor and special correspondent, with Al Jazeera, columnist, political analyst on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, Washington, all kinds of radio. And he's also working on an incredible documentary waiting to talk to him about when he finishes. And Syreeta Hubbard joins us, who's publisher of the blogs GridironGals.com and NFLChick.com. And Edward and Syreeta, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
A pleasure to be with you, Mark.
So, Edward, good. It's been too long, but both of you have not been on the show in the last few weeks, which is not good. So you're back. But
yes, it's good to be back.
So you wrote this very moving piece. I thought it was a very moving piece, Edward, on Michael Sam and what it means to be young, gay, and black, and in sports.
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to take it out of the context in which everyone had been talking about it in terms of its historic significance, and it is a historic moment, and I have a great deal of respect for his accomplishment. But I think it was important to talk about the young boys and girls living in the shadows. And even though I focused on this piece in particular on young black gay youth, the stats on gay youth, regardless of race, are really disturbing. So the Center for Disease Control found in a 2009 survey that 8 out of 10 young gay people between the ages of 13 and 21 had been verbally harassed at school. 4 out of 10 had been physically harassed and abused at school. 6 out of 10 reported feeling unsafe at school. And it made me think about last year's scandal with the Miami Dolphins involving Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito, where there was this locker room culture of teasing and even punching and beating between grown men. And it's sort of this infantile nature within professional sports, which I think a lot of, let's say, heterosexuals within these organizations started to feel that if a man like Michael Sam was admitted into that locker room, he would be subject to what was already happening, even among people who weren't considered homosexual. And so I think if we can look at what's so disturbing about that and then try to think about what that means for young people in schools and in places where they are literally not protected because this kind of behavior has become status quo, we really need to begin to address these issues around what it means to be LGBT in our society, but particularly to be young and LGBT and to feel like you have no voice and no protection.
And folks, I'm curious your thoughts on Michael Sam and what you've heard. Edward, just say 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And what it really means to have Michael Sam come out as the first active player to say that he is gay. And Syreeta, what's your take?
I think that it is historical. I think that I give Michael Sam a lot of credit. That took a lot out of him. And it's great to see that he came out to his college teammates, and which, you know, we didn't know this then, but, you know, later on we found out that they wore a bracelet to unify them with Michael Sam. So it's not that it can't happen. It's absolutely, we know that guys are seemingly gay, and a lot of teammates probably know that they have teammates that are gay, but no one has physically, you know, actually come out and say, I am a gay football player. So I think that, you know, to have someone do something like this and to see the results already, you know, he was in a big program who they went to the SEC championship, you know, so, and to see that they were all rallying behind this guy, hopefully that can translate and transition into the NFL if he lands and stays with the St. Louis Rams. So I'm really pleased that so far it seems like the NFL has his back and that some players have come out and they've tweeted, hey, congratulations, welcome to the team. So far, it looks like it's been a really good reception.
So a couple of things, though, about this and on things that both of you have raised, and folks, we'll get to these calls coming in at 410-319-8888. First is, let me ask a football question first here. I mean, one of the things that's pretty shocking about this, when you talk about what it takes to break any kind of ground, is that you saw Michael Sam, who was the most valuable player for the SEC, one of the best players they had, and no time, as what I've been reading in the history of football in the draft, has somebody with that kind of stature not been picked in the first or second round.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened here that was a little unusual. We talk about it's great. I mean, they say people are praising the St. Louis Rams coach, and they were also the first team to bring an African American player in 1946. They have a history of this, but I'm curious what this says about the establishment and what some of the subtext is going on here.
For me, somebody who watches college and pro football, I'm not too surprised that he went on the third day. Could he have been a mid-round pick, mid-meaning, you know, fourth, fifth, or even sixth? Probably. I think that that would have been ideal. And he probably did slide because, you know, you have a lot of teams that really didn't want to deal with everything that comes with having the openly first gay player. But, you know, ultimately, Michael Sam was really just average on film, and he had one really good game against the Florida Gators that really made him stand out, and he got a lot of his stats from this one game. The rest of the game, he played well, don't get me wrong, and he did earn it by default, ultimately, because Jadeveon Clowney had a down year. So I don't think that he deserved to go first round. I don't think he deserved to go second round or even third round. I think he was a fourth, fifth, or sixth round pick, and that he probably went to seventh because half of the teams didn't want to deal with it. But ultimately, I don't think that he physically was a guy that deserved to go higher than what he went.
Well, I agree and I disagree. I think you're definitely right that this was always going to be at the very most a fourth or fifth round pick, and that's what scouts were saying before he went to the combine. And admittedly, he did not have the best combine results,
mm-hmm.
but this was the co-defensive player of the year. He had more than just one good game. His sacks and his tackles rivaled that of Aldon Smith, the San Francisco 49ers guy who had the best sacks in the league in 2013. And so I think that what began to happen after he came out is, one, most admittedly, his options became limited because, like you just said, there were teams who simply did not want to deal with this. But there was also a narrative that began to form. The same way we have political narratives, there are sports narratives that are promoted by ESPN and the NFL Network. And I actually have spent a lot of time watching this and listening to the way they've talked about him. And they immediately begin to try to create a narrative about him not being tall enough, not being big enough, and not being able to be a real lineman and hold his own in the NFL, even though he was able to do that at the college level. And I think that was all because they were preparing for an end where he did not get drafted and maybe went on as a free agent, right? Or got undrafted as a free agent. And I think that's because at the end of the day, no one wanted to feel responsible if he didn't get drafted, and people had their own individual prejudices. And that's come out even in light of, you know, after the kiss between him and his boyfriend, the kind of tweets that were made, the kind of statements that have been made from NFL players, one of whom I think got fined for doing so. But at the end of the day, yes, there's progress here, but there is still so far to go.
Absolutely.
Let me open the phones here. And we have some other issues are raised during all this, and I think that going back to what Edward was writing, also talk about especially the press online, the Root and other people writing about the event that announced his draft, and we'll talk about that as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on Michael Sam, what this means for football, what this means for the evolution of our thinking and world in gay rights in America, and race. 410-319-8888, which we'll get to in a moment. Michael, you're on the air. Michael, you there? Are we having a problem with the phones? Michael? All right, well, let's try again. 410-319-8888. See if we see it, because Michael usually has a lot to say here. So 410-319-8888. We'll come back to that in a moment. But let me raise an issue here. It was really interesting that many people in the Rootin and some of the other African-American press have raised about, and you see this tweeting all over the place, why was Michael Sam the only black person in the room among his friends celebrating his becoming?
Well, I think that's a really important subject, and it's a part of why I wrote the piece. And I pointed to research from the Black Youth Project. This was a 2012 study that found that 43% of young black youth have thought about or attempted suicide. And then there was a stat that said 90% listed family acceptance as the main factor that could make life more bearable. One of the things that people have not talked about since February when Michael Sam first came out is the fact that his father gave an interview to the New York Times in which he almost adamantly and aggressively disapproved of his son's quote-unquote lifestyle, if we're going to call it that, but his sexual orientation. And Michael Sam has, grew up in poverty. His parents were divorced. Many of his siblings have met really unfortunate ends, early deaths and prison terms and all that kind of thing. And he's been, for the most part, he's sort of estranged from his family. And who we saw in the room, I believe, were the family members of his boyfriend and other family, the family he's chosen, friends of his from Missouri. And so I think that the fact that the father gave that interview speaks to the fact that there is still an issue, not just for young black youth across the country, but even this new icon of such stature. And that, I think, speaks to issues not just in African-American families, but if we're going to talk about race, particularly in this case, I do think his race does matter, because there are lots of African-American fathers and mothers who really have so far to go on this issue.
Cyrena?
I want to piggyback on the point that he made about his father. And, again, he mentioned that he had brothers that were either killed or imprisoned, and yet he's worried about his son being gay. Not that his son could financially help their situation, which at some point you have to wonder, hey, is he going to have his hand out, So for him to basically, it just came off extremely hypocritical. You have one child that's doing the right thing, that's working to
that's
be
graduating from college.
Graduated from college, and you're worried about his sexual orientation when you have other children that's either passed on or that's either imprisonated. And it really bothered me. And I took to Twitter about that when it happened because, again, just like he said, this is just a problem that you see amongst the African-American communities. We rally. It's almost like it's okay. He can deal with that part with the son being imprisoned, but he can't deal with his son being gay. Amidst everything else that he's doing positive in his life. And it's really hard. And that's another reason why you really have to give Michael Sam some credit. He knows what kind of father he had before he came out. He knew that this was going to happen. And he still was strong enough to be able to overcome that and say, hey, this is who I am, and I'm proud of who I am. So this is why it's really important to give this man a lot of props. Because once you saw that interview and you saw what he had to deal with, that's extremely hard to go through.
It sure is. I'm so glad you said that, because it does take an incredible amount of strength. And I think that people don't understand, particularly in African-American communities, our culture and our history. It's very hard for a young black man to stand up and say, I am a homosexual. Like, that is, you risk losing friends and family. And, like, and you even risk it sometimes violence. I think that that's true for LGBT people in general, but I think in particular in the way our culture is in our families, it's really, really hard. And it's very easy, I would say, for a man like him, who's 6'3", who's a defensive lineman, who's playing football at that level, to hide and to lie. And to the amount of strength it takes to not lie, to not hide, deserves accolades.
Well, I'm going to open the phones here. And one thing that was in the L.A. Times is interesting. I'll read this one opening paragraph in the L.A. Times in a story about Michael Sam that came out yesterday morning. It said, Michael Sam might have been the 249th player chosen in last week's NFL draft, but his St. Louis Rams jersey is number 2 in sales among rookie shirts being sold on NFL.com.
Absolutely.
Even I went on, and I'm not even a big football fan, I went on to buy that jersey because I want it framed and I want it signed by him when I meet him.
I'm sure that my youngest daughter is wearing it in high school right now, so 410-319, and we'll take it to the football game, 410-319-8888. And Michael in Baltimore, you're on the air.
First of all, Mark, what needs to be said about this is the example that it gives to youth who are already in the actions of risk-taking to the ultimate degree. When you have teenagers, they don't see the consequences of their actions, and they do it without any kind of thought or compunction about what could happen to them. So when you've witnessed such a thing like that, it's only bringing on more destruction to society at large, and not to mention that this is such a serious sin as far as Judaism says, that if a person comes to you with a gun and says, either you have a relationship with this other man, one man with another, or I'll kill you, a person has to give his life up rather than have that happen. Or if he says to another woman he's not married to, or to one of his relatives, like a sister or brother, he has to give up his life over it. So this is a violation. You still there, Mark?
Yeah, but you're not, because we're going to go on to our next caller. And the next caller said, following what Michael said, another caller just wrote in saying it's wrong. Every society has spoken out against this. His lifestyle is wrong, and the media is making an issue when every society in the world has spoken out against this lifestyle. And they called that in and then hung up.
Mark, I'm a little confused about what Michael was saying, because I didn't understand what that had to do with I didn't understand what he was saying, actually. Can you translate?
Michael is saying that within the Jewish religion, that is a sin to be gay.
And that if
a gun was held to your head to have sexual relations with a man, then your duty is to be killed. Though I'm not quite the kind of guy, because when the Bible was written, whenever that was, there were no guns.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, there will always be those kinds of arguments, and I mean, in the same way, I completely did not understand what he was saying, despite the fact that I'm a fairly intelligent person. I think that oftentimes that kind of dogma is so destructive. And I think that we need to think about what this means in terms of our own family. So if Michael could consider his own child being gay and how that love wouldn't be challenged, or if it would be, I don't really understand what kind of parent that is. Like, I think that we really need to take this out of a sexual context and think about it in terms of love. People are seeking love. Like, that should anybody be denied that? Why should anyone be begrudged that?
Let me just say also, in all seriousness, this is one of our producers also tweeted in to tell me that that's the same Leviticus law that says every single sexual indiscretion should be stoned to death. Like, women who commit adultery should be stoned to death.
Absolutely.
And we don't believe in that either.
Thank you, Mark.
But let me go back to what I just said. What does it mean to you in a larger sense that his jersey is the number two bestseller? People are not buying this jersey to burn it. They're buying this jersey to wear it. You know what I'm saying?
They want to be a part of history just like everybody else. Whether you agree with his lifestyle or not, you cannot deny the fact that this is a part of history. No other player in any other sport has come out and said, you know, I am, you know, openly gay, going from, you know, one phase of their career to the next. Jason Collins did it, but at that point, he had been in the league for a while. He wasn't even playing at the time that he came out and said that he was gay, so it didn't have the same effect. And then now this guy, he has the accolades. He's the co-SEC Defensive Player of the Year, and, you know, so he has a name for himself to some degree. He plays in the best conference in college football, and now all of a sudden he's coming out saying he's gay. Everybody wants to be a part of that, whether you agree
with it
or not.
And you know what that does say? I'm so glad you said that. What that also says is that the majority of Americans are actually far more progressive on this issue than we'd like to believe. And so we do have the loud voices like Michael or the other caller who wrote in. But the truth of the matter is, I think, you know, after President Obama came out in support of gay marriage, polls were taking that found that, like, between 60% and 70% of Americans actually supported the idea. That just goes to show that despite those loud voices, most people are actually quite progressive. And I think, finally, what I want to say is that the great thing about, you know, people, you know, his jersey being number two requested jersey shows that with greater visibility, boys that are out there that are still in their proverbial closets, or what I said in my article, the proverbial locker room,
right,
that they will feel less alone. And I think that they will also feel that they can have a voice, they can be honest about who they are, and they can still expect to be accepted and to be successful. And that is the future.
And, you know, interesting, is that, I don't know if you all saw the article in USA Today, that one of the things that this also raised in Missouri itself was that this could become an open challenge to Missouri law, which
yes.
still allows people to be refused employment and other things because of sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is that even at the federal level, we have a Congress that's refused to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, right?
Yes.
So, yes, Missouri now, I think, probably will be challenged to do that themselves at the state level. But we also have a problem at the national level where we have Republicans in Congress literally blocking that kind of legislation, which is just nonsensical at the end of the day.
So, Rita, what were you about to say?
I was going to say, you know, but what the thing is that we've seen a southern state consider and go through same-sex marriage. So it's absolutely possible.
Mm-hmm.
And now that he plays for a team in Missouri, he just went from, you know, Mizzou, now he's with the Rams, I think mm-hmm. that will come forefront. And I think now, depending on how much of a superstar he is, and I don't even want to say that, he's a figure. Whether he becomes a superstar or not, he's a figure. That can absolutely, his celebrity can push that into be, you know,
yeah.
something that can be approved by Missouri lawmakers.
Someone said this morning, Sarbito, I'm curious what you two think of this, but that you know, when they were talking about Jackie Robinson being the first black man to break the color line, of course, that was a period when the Negro baseball leagues were in full flower, and incredible players were being denied the right to play because they were black. So you knew that Jackie Robinson, one of the greatest players of all time, was still going to be one of the greatest players of all time. Does that make a difference with Michael Sam? Sarita?
You know, it does make a difference. I don't necessarily – I get the comparison because it's similar, but then it's not. But it is a good comparison to have. You know, I mean, we're still living in a time where we're dealing with people that are not comfortable with those that are homosexual. So to see this happening is groundbreaking. It is similar to Jackie Robinson's groundbreaking going into the league. And I think that now we are a more progressive country. I don't think that the backlash will be as bad as it was when Jackie Robinson first came in. It's going to be backlash.
Yeah.
But now we're absolutely growing and progressing, and we're starting to see more states get on board. I think that Michael Sam can absolutely transition through, and he'll be fine. But it's absolutely groundbreaking.
Yeah, I think that I doubt that there's actually going to be much backlash against this, partly because I think at the end of the day, even though the Rams got him in the seventh round, they probably had deduced that that him staying in Missouri was the best thing for his career.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas had he gone to a team in Texas or Florida, they wouldn't know what kind of environment he would be walking into on the field, or whether there'd be reactions in the stands and that kind of thing. He has a fan base in Missouri. There's a strong football culture in Missouri that he's already a part of. And so I think the Rams are hoping that they will tap into that. So the same people who would go to those college games will now come to their football games and follow him as well as the team at large. And so I think that he's kind of being protected in a way by staying in Missouri. And that's actually a good thing. At least because this is the first, and there will always – well, there might remain issues around this issue. And so I suspect that he's actually going to at least have a good start to his career.
So I'm curious what you both think this means for other young men and women, but especially young men, because other women have come out
mm-hmm.
in greater numbers than men, declaring their sexuality as gay or lesbian. So I wonder – what do you think this is going to mean? Do you think, because there are so many athletes who are gay?
Well, you remember that there was supposed to be a group of people that were active NFL players that were supposed to have come out, and then at the last minute they
right,
decided
right.
not to.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, people want this. People need it. All it takes is one person. All it takes is one. And then you'll slowly start to see people becoming more acceptive of who they are and being open about who they are. So, you know, unfortunately, it didn't happen when the group decided that they didn't want to do it. But now you have someone who said that they wanted to be the trailblazer, and now I think you'll definitely see with men. I think it's much easier with women. We accept it with women more so than men, but now that we have someone that was a star in his own right coming out of college saying that he's gay, I think that we'll slowly start to see that door opening a little bit more, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, you know, I saw an ESPN analyst talking about what it means beyond him just playing and being a part of the team, but more so as he integrates into football culture, will he feel comfortable bringing his boyfriend to official NFL events? And if he's holding his boyfriend's hand on a red carpet or something like that, in the same way we saw that there was a slight backlash to that kiss between them, even though it was the most natural thing to do in that moment, to kiss the person that you're in a relationship with, to hug that person and to celebrate in that way. And I wonder if America and football fans are ready for that. I think they are very happy to see him in uniform, on the field, performing, doing executing sacks and that sort of thing. But I'm not quite sure if he becomes visible as the face of a relationship, a gay relationship, and actively in the press in that way. I wonder if there'll be backlash to that. I'm a little skeptical at the moment.
Well, we'll find out, and we'll see how this unfolds and continue these conversations. I want to thank both of you for being with us. My dear friend Edward Wyckoff Williams in the house once again, contributing editor to The Root, political contributor and special correspondent with Al Jazeera America, Syreeta Hubbard, who puts out GridironGirls.com and NFLChick.com, and joins us often for our discussions on football. Thank the two of you so much for joining us here in the segment of The Mark Steiner Show.
An absolute pleasure, Mark.
Take care, y'all. We can take a brief break. We're going out once again with the Coasters because this is the birthday of Will Dub Jones, who was a major singer with one of the major singers of the four of them in the Coasters. This is going out with Searching. We are searching, aren't we? Searching. Be right back. Stay with us with our next segment, looking at climate change.